I think it's a real testament to the music program at this church that we can have just seven musicians on the chancel and hear the quality of music we heard this morning. It's really amazing. As I was preparing to deliver this December 26th sermon, it occurred to me that despite arguments about when the new millennium actually begins, in the year 2000 or 2001, in the eyes of most, this will be the last sermon of the millennium. So it should probably be a good one. After all, it's going to be another 1,000 years before there's a chance to entitle another sermon, the last sermon of the millennium. And despite remarkable strides in the field of medicine, I have no illusions about being around to deliver that next millennial sermon. And I really struggled about what to talk about this morning, considering this is the day after Christmas, and we are rapidly approaching the year 2000. It seems the subject of the message should be seasonal or topical or both. The most obvious subject, I decided, was to discuss all the outrageous end-of-the-world scenarios that are being bandied about. But our own Robert Myers beat me to the punch and delivered a sermon entitled Millennial Spookery just a few months ago. And I see no reason to go over that same ground, particularly in light of the fact that his sermon covered that ground in his typically skillful and entertaining way. Still, I wasn't ready to give up on this end of the millennium idea. So I decided it might be interesting if we gave some thought to what the world was like at the end of the previous millennium, 1,000 years ago, and what the world might be like at the end of the coming millennium, 1,000 years in the future. And then, after having done our best to envision the world in the year 1,000 and the year 3,000, I thought it would be interesting to reflect on our faith as we sit poised on the edge of the year 2000 and see if there are any truths which we can say today, which would have been equally true 1,000 years in the past, and that we are confident would still be true 1,000 years in the future. Perhaps we should measure a great number of our thoughts against that standard and see what ideas truly stand firm against the ultimate test of time. So we begin with the past. If you're envisioning this journey we're about to take along an evenly divided timeline, we're going halfway back to Jesus, to the year 1000 AD. And this places us, of course, right in the middle of what people of European heritage would come to call the Middle Ages. And it stands at either the end or the middle of the Dark Ages, depending on what historian you're reading. So let's take an overview of the world we find here in the year 1000. As for religion, Christianity has continued its spread from Palestine across Europe and has recently made it as far as Iceland and Greenland. Great medieval cathedrals are being built, and every church hopes to have the relics, the bones, and the personal possessions of some saint on display. The service is in Latin and consists of two parts: Mass, which we would call Holy Communion, and the priests singing the Psalms, also in Latin. At this point in time, however, it should be noted that the people who attend church are permitted to partake of the bread and wine of Mass. It will be about 200 to 300 years in the future that people will be denied the privilege of the bread and the cup for fear that a drop of wine, the actual blood of Christ, or a piece of bread, the actual body of Christ, might fall to the floor. By the middle of the 13th century, a screen will have been placed between the chancel and the nave, and those who attend the service will be permitted only to observe the priest through the screen with his back to the audience, perform the communion ceremony in Latin, and only himself eat the bread and drink the wine. Now you know why we had a Reformation, right? Of course, here in the year 1000, Christianity isn't the only religion in the world. Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism dominate the religious scene in the East. Islam has now spread across Europe, And it is at this time that the spiritual center of Judaism is moving from the Middle East to Spain. And while we in the Christian world have fallen into these dark ages, both Arabs and Jews have continued to embrace learning and scholarship, and they are among the most educated groups in the world. It is from those groups that the court physicians, for example, in Germany, are selected. In another 9 years, by the way, in 1009, the Muslims will sack one of Christianity's holiest sites, the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, which leads to the fact that within 100 years, the Crusades will begin, with misguided Christians committing various atrocities in the name of taking back the Holy Land. The Christian church will undergo its first great schism in 54 years when the religious powers in the East refuse to accept the authority of the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, and the church will be divided into the Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholic churches. One other thing I should mention on the subject of religion, just because I find it interesting, it will be in the year 1009 that Anselm of Canterbury will be born. His will be regarded as perhaps the greatest mind in the history of the church, and his philosophical argument for the existence of God, which is called the ontological argument, will be considered the greatest such argument ever put forth, and it will be a hotly debated subject by theologians in the year 1999. Of course, the world is composed of more than religion. In what will be called South America, after Columbus discovers it some 492 years in the future, the amazingly artistic Tiahuanaco civilization has covered Peru. It is at this moment that we find the climax of the Mayan civilization in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. And on the subject of art, we should mention that it is at this time that we see a major revival in Italy of both frescoes and mosaics, many of which will stand the test of time and beautify the world for 1,000 years. In England, I take this kind of personally, the book Beowulf is written, which is an old English poem that by the 20th century will become a nightmare for students of literature and the humanities all over the English-speaking world. In Japan, a woman in the Japanese imperial court keeps a diary of her experiences. It's called the Pillow Book. It's a predecessor of the tell-all book, and it will keep tongues wagging for at least 1,000 years. Well, what's happening in politics? The printing press won't be invented for several centuries, but if it did exist here in the year 1000, our headlines would read something like this. Trade between Europe and Asia increases. Venice becomes great power, rules over the Adriatic Sea. King Raja Raja of India's Kola dynasty conquers Ceylon. Pope Sylvester II, a noted mathematician, inventor, and philosopher, becomes the first French pope. Pope Sylvester II names Hungary's King Stephen Apostolic Majesty. King Olaf I of Norway, killed in Battle of Svolder, Norway becomes Danish. Bohemia and Moravia unite. The Holy Roman Empire's Otto III, who became king back in 983 at the age of 3, makes Rome his permanent residence. The Vikings solidify colonies in Greenland and Iceland and raid Wales. A lot happened in the year 1000. Vikings Leif Erikson, son of Eric the Red, rumored to have discovered America, Nova Scotia, to be precise. And finally, last but not least, I have to throw in this headline that could have appeared in the year 1007. Ethelred II, also known as, I love this, Ethelred the Unready, presumably because he assumed England's throne at the age of 10, pays the Danish government £30,000 for the promise the Danes will stop attacking England for at least a couple of years. What can I say? Some truths truly do stand the test of time, and money talks seems to be one of those. That's an overview of the political atmosphere, which leaves us only with the cultural scene to examine. Music notation has just been developed. A pipe organ with 400 pipes has been constructed at Winchester Monastery in England. The Chinese, and this is amazing since this is what we would call the Dark Ages, the Chinese have assembled a 1,000-volume encyclopedia. While we're on the subject of the Chinese, they have finally perfected one of their most famous inventions and determined the precise amounts of charcoal, sulfur, and potassium nitrate required to make the ultimate batch of gunpowder. I think the NRA considers this a holy year for that reason. There are many reports of people trying to fly. Most of these seem to be secondhand accounts, as the flyers themselves are left in no condition to write about their adventures. And last but not least, there is a widespread fear that the end of the world is approaching with the coming of the new millennium. Well, it's time to jump forward a couple of thousand years and try to look at the future. Try to imagine what the year 3000 might look like. And I'll be honest, I can't do it. Things are changing so fast. Owen Gingrich, professor of astronomy and the history of science at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, notes that our great-grandparents would be more at home in 16th century Europe than they would in present-day America. The rate of change the world is currently experiencing absolutely boggles the mind. Just 100 years ago, the idea that human beings could use a machine to fly was just a dream. And 30 years ago, we sent people to the moon and back. And consider this, the computing power found on that little personal computer located on your desk at home is significantly greater than the total computing power used to send those people to the moon and back. Owen Gingrich wrote an article in a recent copy of Christian Century, which he called The Future of Homo Sapiens. Some of the information I pass along now is from that article. He points out that there's an optimistic and a pessimistic way to envision humanity's outlook for the next 1,000 years. First, the pessimistic. It was 40 years ago that the doomsday equation was developed, which led to the term population bomb. Now, fortunately, the rate of growth in the world's population has slowed just over the past decade, but the trend is still there. In the year 1900, there were 16 cities with a population of 1 million. Today, there are 400. Our planet's population doubled between 1960 and 1993. If human beings still exist on this planet in the year 3000, one of two things simply has to happen. Either the birth rate must fall drastically, or the death rate must increase by leaps and bounds. It doesn't help matters that as part of the church is spreading the gospel in the third world, it is telling its new converts they must not use birth control. But I don't even want to get started on that right now. In spite of the birth rate, many experts seem to think that as a species, we will indeed survive for the next 1,000 years. Unfortunately, this optimism is based on the probability of three things: widespread genocide, epidemic diseases such as AIDS, and mass starvation. Some experts predict that the world will see some of the most vicious and deadly wars it has ever experienced as the world's oil reserves become depleted. Some scientists say we've got about 5 decades worth of oil at current rates of consumption. Many argue we have more than that, although I know of no one who denies that our current energy resources are not renewable. And consider this, most of the nations that will want and need that oil will have weapons of untold destructive power at their disposal as supplies diminish. Owen Gingrich closes this pessimistic part of his story by saying, "The oversupply of people and the undersupply of energy lead many to believe we have only two possible futures, a bleak and brutish struggle for survival or an all-out apocalypse." Well, I wouldn't leave you hanging there. Philip Morrison, a professor emeritus at MIT, says that he gives Homo sapiens at least another 10 million years. He believes we will learn to use solar energy with such efficiency, there will come a time when energy truly is inexpensive and inexhaustible. He believes we will arrive at a time in the future, and must arrive at a time in the future, when we maintain a population on Earth at about one-tenth its current level. He does expect nuclear weapons to be used, quite probably in the Middle East in this coming century, but just enough to convince us once and for all that the use of nuclear weapons is a really bad idea. Owen Gingrich agrees that human beings may be able to survive into the distant future, but then he asks what to me is the most troubling question of all. Will those human beings, even 1,000 years from now, still be Homo sapiens? Or will we have evolved into a new species? Think about this. It took 2 million years for Homo habilis to evolve into Homo sapien. It's been 200,000 years since the evolutionary picture really changed, that being when Homo sapiens developed language, which enabled us to communicate, which meant we could begin to organize societies. That does not mean, however, that our species won't undergo a major change in just the next 1,000 years. But this time, that change will occur not as a result of the methodical and long-range forces of nature, but rather because we have learned how to manipulate our genetic structure. We are presently using our new knowledge of genetics in marvelous ways for the benefit of humankind, and it appears that many diseases once thought to be a permanent part of the human landscape will soon be eradicated. We can't run away from the field of genetics as if it had never been discovered, and it holds a world of promise for our future. And very soon, geneticists will be able to create, in Gingrich's words, happier, healthier, and more intelligent people. We're going to be able to make our brains bigger. And while Gingrich sees this as a wonderful thing, I would say that we must be extremely careful. The ethical issues arising out of this field of study are more complex than any ethical issues the human race has ever been confronted with. We're dealing with the very fabric of who and what we are, and the potential to upset the delicate balance of life on this planet is real. I hope we all realize the stakes involved, that we monitor the advances being made in this field, and that we prayerfully contemplate the implications for our world and the impact our decisions will have on our children's children's children. Well, obviously, I've failed miserably in my attempt to envision the world in the year 3000. But I believe I can state with certainty that the world in the year 3000 will be more different from our world today than this world today is different from the year 1000. But I can't imagine the path those changes will take. Still, let me assure you that I am indeed an optimist, because I believe that even through the frantic pace of change, even in the midst of what seems to be our desperate aloneness in this vast universe, even with the potential of corrupt and misguided political and economic powers manipulating the future of this world, and yes, even with some of our most brilliant scientists dismissing our concerns about a genetically engineered future as the superstitious fears of the ignorant, Even with all these things working against us, we have something working for us that is far greater than all of those principalities and powers, and that is God. Because while God does not predestine our every step so that we move through this world like actors on a stage with a preassigned script, and while God does not micromanage all the little things that happen in the world on a moment-to-moment basis, and while God has created us as free beings, free moral agents in a universe that constantly requires we make decisions between right and wrong, God is still ultimately in control. God is the driving force behind creation, the power of love that makes one second lead seamlessly into the next, the spirit of truth and love that gives meaning to our every step and provides the courage to walk fearlessly into a future we simply cannot foresee, a future which we must trust ultimately is in the hands of God. I began by saying that after attempting to envision the world in the year 1000 and the year 3000, it would be interesting to reflect for a moment on our faith as we enter the year 2000 and see if we have any truths which were equally true 1,000 years in the past and will still be true 1,000 years in the future. I try not to repeat ideas from the pulpit too often, but in this case, I have to conclude this sermon the exact same way I concluded the sermon I last delivered from this pulpit, which involved the three things we try to teach our children here at University Congregational Church. My conviction that these three things should be the anchors of our faith is emboldened when I conclude that the truth held within these statements truly does withstand the test of time. I believe they could be spoken in truth 1,000 years ago, and I believe they will be equally true 1,000 years in the future. Our three anchors: God loves us. We can learn about God by learning about Jesus. And there is a difference between right and wrong, and we should choose to do what is right. How sincerely we believe these things will have a lot to do with whether or not there are any voices left to speak them 1,000 years from now.